Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. I can't wait to introduce my guest for today. Before we dive in, a couple of things. I'm recording this before the new year, but you're listening to this in the new year, so it's kind of an interesting just mindset because I know when we get to this, we'll be well into 2020 and we'll have made it through the holidays, but I'm sitting here recording this 8 days before Christmas. You know what I'm wondering? I'm wondering if countries outside of the US make such a big deal about the holidays, like Black Friday, all the craziness, all the things that make it stressful. I try to avoid a lot of those things, which makes me feel a tiny bit grinchy, but I do the lights, I do the tree, do some gifts, but try to keep it fairly low key. My daughter's just making some chocolate reindeer to hand out to some friends tomorrow. So we get some creativity in and some giving for sure. So for those that are new to co-working and thinking about opening a space or on your journey, I launched an ebook. I think it's really helpful. It's 8 steps to creating a profitable co-working space that you love to run. You can find it in Amazon. The fastest way to find it is to search for my name, Jamie Russo. There's only two of us and only one of us writes about co-working. So easy to figure that one out. So pop into Amazon and grab it. It covers a lot of the things I talk about in the podcast, but probably in more detail and just more synthesized in terms of a framework to use to think about opening a co-working space. So hopefully you enjoy it. It is 99 cents. I couldn't figure out how to make it free. If you have Kindle Unlimited, it's free. So the idea is not that to make money from it. The idea is to get some information in your hands that's helpful, but it's 99 cents. So today, my guest is Javier Garcia, who is the CEO and co-founder of iOS Offices. They have 36 locations throughout Mexico. He lives in Monterrey, Mexico, and I'm going to put the link to their website in the show notes because I think you're going to really enjoy him and be very curious about their brand when we're done. His spaces are beautiful. They are one of the largest purchasers of Herman Miller furniture in Mexico. So I heard that fun fact at an industry event, and that's always stuck in my head, and I've been very envious. So he talks about that decision, but also talks about the intense community that they have. And I love following them on social. So if you are looking for inspirational brands to follow on social, find them, iOS Offices, on Facebook and Instagram, and they put up a lot of pictures of their community events. Javier was talking about sort of a pop-up market for the holidays that they were doing today. And I happened to see it afterwards on Facebook. And, you know, it's there in Mexico. So it's outside, like on a rooftop deck. It looks fabulous and, you know, kind of fancy for a co-working space. But Javier is lovely and has been doing this for a couple of decades. So he just has so much experience to share. And I love the culture and what they're creating there. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. I am here today with a very special guest. I cannot wait to dive into his story, Javier Garcia Iza, CEO of iOS Offices. Javier, you'll have to give us the updated stats, but you've been around for about 12 years, 35 plus locations, and you just hit 20,000 members. What a milestone. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Since I've met you, you cast a very strong impression on me. So it's a real honor to be today in your podcast.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. I can't wait to dive into your story. And I have to give you an official thank you. Javier often wins the award for bringing the fullest team to the GWA conference. And they always come bearing gifts. I think that must be a cultural thing. We love it. Yeah. We love your team and we appreciate the support to the industry. So you've been doing this for a while, like looks from your LinkedIn right out of college. And I have not ever heard your story. So can you just start by telling us kind of how you got into shared office space and just sort of your walk us through the past, we won't say how many years total. Javier and I were just talking about how young and fabulous we still are.
Well, thank you, Jim. Yeah, yes. I in fact majored as a mechanical engineer, and right out of school, my family was already involved in real estate. And we started with an HQ franchise back in the 90s.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. So interesting.
Yeah, which was very fun. It was, we had to educate the market here in Monterrey.
Yeah.
Because nobody was doing this. And well, we started growing since the beginning. We actually went through HQ's and Regis's bankruptcy in the early 2000s. So at some point in time, I ended up being a franchisee of my competitor, which was just a block away, because they actually merged both companies around in 2003.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, as you mentioned, I stepped out of the family business around 2006.
Okay.
And we were not expecting, but it was within a year when we were already starting operations at iOS offices, me and Adrián. We were thrilled to start our own company. And it's been a roller coaster of emotions and fun with me and all of our team.
How big is your team today?
We are 300 people. We are, as you mentioned, 36 locations in 12 cities around Mexico. And we started in Monterrey, then we went to Mexico City, and then we did Tijuana, Guadalajara, and we've been spreading the co-working culture around the country for quite some time now. And as I've mentioned, it's been a really fun walk, a real fun path doing all of this.
So this is trying to think about the best way to ask this question, but I mean, you started at the beginning, and a lot of folks don't realize, I mean, shared office space has been around since the 70s. You know, the Global Workspace Association has been running a conference for over 30 years. And I think a lot of folks don't realize that because from a media perspective, no one cared about it until, yeah, you know, the last, I don't know, maybe 5 years. And there are still so many people who don't realize it's a solution. And you've been through an incredible, you know, journey of that kind of changing. What, I mean, what is business like now versus when you first started?
Well, I can tell you a little bit about how working started and how did it merge into this shared office industry.
Yeah.
I remember, as you mentioned, that this kind of industry started back in the 70s. And one of the main things that brought us together as a community was to share a fax machine.
Right.
That. And it's true.
There are people listening. They're like, a what?
A what? Yeah. So people will hire our services in order to share a reception desk, a receptionist, telephone answering service, a fax machine, and a conference room. So after one of our members will not need the physical space anymore to attend an office every day, they will just walk away from our center, and then they will realize that their phone number is still being answered by our reception lady, and that their address, it is still being our address. So we were still receiving their notifications and mail. So that's how virtual offices came into place. So we will not give you the physical space anymore, but we will give you the address and we will answer your phone. So back then there was no email. So
people, not to dates or anything, but right. Pre-email, so wild.
So a receptionist will write down the messages for a client, and then they will actually walk in the office, pick up their fax, their mail, their messages, and then they will realize they had taken too much time for that task or for that errand. So they will sit at the reception desk and start drinking coffee, using the newspaper, using the restroom, talking to the reception lady, and then you will have a whole bunch of them just making noise. And so the business offices, the business centers, or the shared office space started to look at them like a virus for our business. It's true, because they didn't want them to be there anymore. So you will see back then, like, very strong clauses in their agreements that they are not supposed to spend over a minute.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. No, yeah, loitering. You may come, yeah, and get your mail and your messages and then...
And go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you would stay a little more, we will start charging you as if you were using a conference room. And they will start doing that. So that's when I realized that was going on. And it was around the time we opened our first center. And I actually went to my brother and I go, like, Adrián, we should do something about it. There are a bunch of people that have spare moments during the day that they don't want to be at home, or they don't need to be at home, and they are here because they're running errands. So that's how we opened our first co-working back in 2007. And it was a huge success. From the minute we opened, we saw tens of people and then hundreds of people using our space. And Adrián asked me, when I mentioned that to him, he goes like, Javier, how much are we going to charge them to use our space? And I went like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Let's just do this and then we'll figure it out. Let's see if it works. So it worked, and we replicated that model into the rest of our centers.
What did you call it then?
We used to call it business lounge.
Yeah. Okay. Because, it's such an interesting insight. It's like all these, probably most of them were men. You know, to your point, they're professionals. And if they're working at home, presumably, or wherever they were, like they want a little social time. They're drinking your coffee, reading your paper, they want to hang out. And you're like, we should let them.
Yeah, we should. Because everybody was like kicking them away. Like, you're here. Yeah. And it was some sort of like a business lounge of an airline in an airport.
Yep. So
it was something like that.
Yep.
We tried to do that at the beginning.
And then, so, I mean, it sounds like you were almost a little sort of counterculture at the beginning, like saying, look, you know, let's try some things, you know, let's not do what everybody else does and kick them out. Tell us a little bit about your brand and your culture. And I observe some of it, you know, following you on Facebook, but I'd love to hear from your perspective, you know, what is the iOS brand and what does it promise your members?
Thank you. And just to say something about what you're saying, yes, we are a very experimentalist company. We love doing experiments, like introducing alcoholic beverages or like a magazine like this one I'm showing to you right now. Yeah, so we do many things that we don't really know how they're going to work or not, but we try. I'm going to be able to answer the best way your question. But yeah, we have a very strong culture. Since we started the iOS brand, we noticed that our customers were more engaged by extroverts and by outgoing people.
Mm-hmm.
So we, even though it was a stronger challenge to hire extrovert, outgoing people, and I might not have the best words in English to describe
this. That's okay. We're patient.
Young professionals that would go out at night and party and sometimes come without sleeping to work at the next day. And they were very social and they will speak with our clients, and our clients, our members would be so happy, and the energy and the environment is starting being so strong. And the real challenge was to, I mean, people are essentially unmanageable, but we had to deliver a service, not only hire fun people. So it was a big challenge to try to mix these outgoing kind of fun people with also delivering tasks, being on time.
Yep.
So I actually went into a conference room with them at the beginning and asked them how and what kind of company they want to run. So we went to a retreat, our first convention back in 2007, which we just came back from our 13th convention.
Wow.
And we wrote down the rules that they actually wrote them down. They wrote down the vision of the company, the mission statement, the values of the company, and some etiquette rules on how are we going to address the members, and if we were going to dress in which way, or smoke in the premises, out of the premises, how far away from the premises, and things like that. And yeah, it's evolved into a very strong culture of service. It's also fun. I think people like to have fun in their workplace.
Yeah.
Not only my staff, but our clients as well, our members. So I think delivering a strong happiness culture is very important for every company, and everywhere any human being spends most of its time, it should be fun. For example, you like CrossFit. CrossFit should be fun for you. You should go to a place where they have clean areas, well-serviced staff, well-trained trainers, so they can actually train you and orient you in your muscles and the flexibility you need so you don't get injured. So we try to do the same at the office space. We try to deliver our members everything they need to be happy and to be productive. So if they make business, if they grow, we will grow with them.
What does your membership look like today? Like, do you have kind of a, do you serve the tech industry or professionals, or what does it look like?
Well, we have a big portion of very large companies. so we serve like big multinational companies, either based in or outside of Mexico. Okay. We also serve an important number of professionals. These go from architects, consultants, lawyers, to ex-CEOs or ex-CFOs of companies. It's like a self-job, self-employed person. Mm-hmm. And we have a wide range of entrepreneurs, from things that are very creative to normal companies that are also like startups. So we attend a big and varied, like I think we all do in this industry, go with all of those ranges.
Do you think there's a particular reason that you attract the multinational corporations?
Well, we tend to be very strong in the solid part of our business. We have a very good security systems for our network, very strong, like emergency things place. Like for example, in 2017, we had a big earthquake and we actually had that earthquake hit 22 of our locations.
Oh gosh.
Like in four cities. And we evacuated over 10,000 members in our centers. And we had no injury, nothing. Not in our centers, but not in any of the buildings that our centers are at. So we have good locations. We check the emergency stairs. So when a large multinational comes and audits us, they will audit our administrative procedures, like systems. They will actually interview our staff if they are well treated and well paid and on time. So they will go into very strong audits in order for them to comply with whatever they need to comply internationally or in the stock market. And yeah, so we try to have very high standards of quality in every aspect of the business.
Would you say those standards, did you kind of start with that goal in mind, or did you create those standards and then kind of attract, was it sort of accidental or intentional, that audience?
It's a bit of both. We try to reshape the business model the few months or years after we opened. But since the beginning, Adriana and I knew that we were competing against ourselves because we have already created a company that did similar things. So in order for us to be successful, we tried to do something different. And by different, we actually ended up doing something better. And when we ended up opening our first location, we realized our product, our service, our facilities was of higher quality, our infrastructure, and also was our staff. So we have always been focused in the highest of qualities possible available in the market. And we're targeting the most demanding client.
That's a great way to frame it. Is it the most demanding client? And you can deliver on that. I'll have to put some of your photos in the show notes because you have beautiful spaces. And let's talk about your Herman Miller purchases.
Yeah.
So you're one of the largest buyers of Herman Miller furniture in Mexico, I understand.
Yeah. Well, you know, serving the most service demanding member, it's very hard. But at the same time, if you have the systems in place, it's at the same time a bit easier because a client that is demanding, he will say what he wants and, I don't know, enforce that that's being delivered. And whenever a human being communicates with you and tells you what you want, well, you either have the option to do it, to be neglect and not do it. But if you actually do it, you will have a very satisfied member. And when a little less demanding member shows up and he wants us to guess what he's thinking, we cannot do that.
That's such an interesting insight. I love that. Yeah.
So when we are told what they need and what they don't want, it's in certain way simpler for us to manage because now we know. So we have the systems in place. We will capture everything we know about them and then we'll deliver.
Yeah. I mean, you're very clear on who you serve. And to your point, that sort of reinforces itself because they're clear with you, which makes you more clear and you deliver what they're looking for and you attract those people because you have that, you know, sort of culture.
And you were mentioning it. Yeah. One day I was driving in a nice street here at home and I saw this beautiful office furniture. And I went like with Adrian again, like, Adrian, this furniture is so beautiful. And we realized the average cost of a desk or a chair it's like 8 times what we were used to pay for a chair or a desk. So we ended up negotiating an agreement with Herman Miller that will allow us as entrepreneurs to actually pay them a bit later. So they will give us some time. So that's why, how the way we made our first purchase with them. And then we've been having a great relationship, business relationship with them. And yeah, we are, if not the main, one of their most important clients in Mexico.
Yeah. I mean, it may seem a small thing what shares you use, but on the other hand, your demanding clients know, you know, it's a signal of kind of your culture and your standards. So I think that's, Herman Miller is not a good fit for everyone who's listening to this.
Well, if your chair doesn't itch, you will maybe be working a little bit more time.
Totally. Yeah.
And that will make you more productive. So
there's an ROI there. Yeah.
We try to do that. We try to take all the hassles away from our customers in order for them to be productive.
So I'm curious, because you've lived through some of these, what's your perspective on our business surviving an economic downturn?
Yeah, well, we've survived a few of them.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, one of the few. So tell us.
No, you say only me. I think the industry has been around for all the...
It has, but not very many operators have actually lived through, I mean, you with HQ and then 2007. I mean, you've seen a couple of these cycles.
Yeah, well, we are a very high fixed cost kind of business model. So we need to maintain a certain amount of occupancy level in order for us to survive. So I think, well, my grandmother used to say, there is no crisis that can put up with 12 hours of work. So it's
where there's a will, there's a way.
So we try to just navigate through those, which in my perspective, the economic downturns at our industry level will impact us in approximately 6 months. I mean, that's the hard punch. And if we are able to take 6 months, then I think we will be able to get to the other side. Hmm.
So you think roughly downturn. When it happens, you've got about 6 months of real like pain. And then if you can make it through that, then... So you lease all of your spaces?
Yes.
Yes. And no management agreement, joint venture type relationships?
No, we lease all of our centers. I think maybe one of our locations, maybe it's a variable thing, but yeah, most of it's fixed. Yeah.
And have you ever closed a location during a downturn?
No, we've never closed a location in a downturn.
Besides working hard, any advice for, did you see members leave and what types?
Yes.
You did, okay.
Like for example, back in 2001, in March, we have the NASDAQ crash down. I don't know if you remember that, but our halls, so our hallways and our offices will feel like desert, like it's like a grave jar.
Yeah.
Because it had this feeling of a lot of our clients losing their bonuses or their stock options. So it was like a very dark feeling for a few weeks. But yeah, so back then, our main client was the dot-com industry. What I've learned is that whenever we get an industry client, we will attract more of that same industry. If it is the train industry or the oil companies, or in that case, the stock market or finance, I mean, the dot-coms.
Yep.
So we will attract their competitors, their suppliers.
Kind of an ecosystem, yeah. So, but eventually things sort of settle out and they return.
Yeah, well, I think a very lean administration is always helpful, but those are just generic kind of advice that you need in any company.
Did you have to negotiate with your landlords on paying rent, or did you have enough kind of capital to make it through tough times?
No, we've always been close to our landlords, and I think we've been fortunate enough to have landlords that are sensitive. When I mean always, is why wait until the downturn? I mean, we should always be in contact with them and let them know how the business is going. And sometimes we as our industry and our occupancy levels are in some way related to the occupancy levels of the building or the city even.
Yep.
So why wait until we have like a very big punch? They know they're hurting a little. We are hurting too. So let's work together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an important mindset, though. I think for folks who have not had landlord relationships where this is new. They sort of, you know, that just, they're not comfortable with that relationship or kind of know how to manage it. So I think that's an important insight. Curious about, so you and your brother founded the company. What does your executive team look like today with 300 employees?
Well, we have an amazing team. Many of them, which have been with us for about 12 years now. So we have a guy in IT, which actually started with us in IT. We have also a lady heading up the building of new locations. We have a very young, very talented girl in HR, and she's been in the company for like 6 years.
Wow.
We have also a very spirited friend, because we've become friends, which has been with me also for over 12 years. She's married now with two kids, and she handles off all of our public relationships. And then we have one girl that has been with us for 7 or 8 years, and she will handle customer relationships, because being in touch with our member is very important. And I might be missing, we have a very strong COO, which used to be our CFO. She used to be a consultant for us, but now she's been full-time like for 4 or 5 years. So we have a very strong mix, mainly women. 70% of the staff in our company are female. And most of the people that work at iOS offices is under the age of 30.
Oh, wow. Interesting. What does your typical day look like?
Oh, I have no routine. I have no typical day.
Okay.
I wish. I mean, when I was young, I was happy that I had no routine. But yep. For the last few years, I wish I woke up in the same bed for, like for a week. I travel a lot. I spend part of my time in Monterrey, part of my time in Mexico City. And then with the rest of the locations and the GWA conference every year, I keep myself busy trying to attend whatever I can.
Yeah.
And for the last couple of years, I've been invited many times to deliver keynote at different associations and companies and whatnot. So I have been also learning how to speak in public, which it's something very tough for me at the beginning, but I've been trying to become better. Yeah, I also love to go hiking the mountains, mountain biking, running. Yeah, so, but I have no typical days.
Speaking of running, do you have a running club as part of one of your member activities?
Well, we organize 3 massive races every year.
The races, that's what I'm thinking of that I see on Facebook.
One in Guadalajara, one in Mexico City, and one in Monterrey. So we've been doing that for 8 years in Monterrey now, 7 in Mexico City and 6 in Guadalajara.
Wow.
And we get roughly 8,000 to 9,000 runners every year.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So the ticket costs around $15 to $20, the race ticket. And all the proceeds go to kids, either to nutrition for kids or cerebral paralysis. That's with the races, we have been able to donate approximately $50,000 every year.
Wow.
for kids. Yeah.
I mean, this is certainly one of the benefits of your scale with 20,000 members and your culture and your community. Like the fact that you get so many people engaged, you know, in that and to be able to donate to important organizations, that's got to be super rewarding.
It is very fun because we see families, entire families running, some of them with their pets. And yeah, it's a very nice day. I actually have met many of our members at the race because we don't get the time or the chance to meet them all. But yeah, I've met very interesting people that I don't even know are a part of our community. So yeah, it's also the months before the race, everybody starts like improving their diet.
Right, totally.
Yeah, their habits.
Good for their health. Yeah.
So it's a very positive cycle, the race for our community and for our company.
I think there's still, at least in the US, a little bit of a myth that at more professional spaces, people sort of keep to themselves and, you know, there's less community. And to me, your culture is just evidence that that's not the case, right? But you've intentionally created that and created opportunities like your races to get people engaged. And you were sort of founded out of that premise that, look, people want some space, you know, to interact and sit and read their paper and eventually do emails.
When I was out of work and I was unemployed, I traveled to Toronto to see this company, which I wanted to buy a franchise for. They will shred paper. It's called Shredded. So okay. I was evaluating bringing Shredded into Mexico. And while being there, after work, we went to this bar downstairs of their building, of their office building. So that's when it occurred to me that it is fun to have a drink at the office. So we came up with this business after hours. I don't know if you've heard of the term sans cassette, which is very French Canadian. Okay. So from 5 to 7, sans cassette, they will go and have a drink and then they will go home. We try to do those business after hours at our business, at our buildings, and we do them very often. We currently host almost 3,000 events a year company-wide. So we have things going on every day. For example, today, 3 of our centers are giving, we have these like bazaar. So we are selling Mexican Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
We are not actually selling them. We provide the area.
Like a pop-up shop. Like Yep.
Like a pop-up shop. So we get a lot of suppliers, like mostly local, will come in our centers and sell jewels or sell water or soaps or things. And our members will walk, buy a few things. So we do many variety of things every day.
Yeah. I mean, again, very intentional, because you could sort of stop and say, you know, we're the professional place for demanding clients and leave it at that. And yet you've integrated sort of all those community elements that make it even more special. Okay, I could ask you questions all day, but I'm going to limit to a couple more. Besides the economic downturns, you've been doing this for a long time. What's like one of the things about growing this business that's been a challenge?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm very happy to be speaking with you, because this has been very fun. And the way you handle the conversation, it flows very natural. So I think this is something everybody in our industry should know. And I think many already know, but we are in the most service-intensive industry in the world. Our market, or the market, does not realize it yet, but even more than hospitals, hotels, restaurants, the intensity of our services is so tough, because we have our client, our member, using our space 8 hours a day. They will walk through our doors 3 or 4 times a day, use our restrooms, use our telephone lines, use our internet access, say hello to our staff, like many, many times. So we have hundreds and hundreds of moments of truth every day coming, going through our spaces. This morning, when I had a few minutes between one meeting and the next, I went downstairs to a local brunch place and ate something really fast. So there was one of our members that was having a brunch there. So I sat with him, and he starts telling me all of the lives of my staff, because he knows who's getting married. He knows when she's getting married. And this is a 60-year-old guy that just came in the community like a couple of months ago. I don't really know the person. I mean, it's the second time in my life I see him. And it was, so he started telling me about his company and how she's growing. But he started also telling me about who his neighbors are. So what I'm trying to say, Jamie, is that our members, our clients, know a lot more about our company than we do. This is not like any other kind of company. So we need to keep very good quality in everything, because it is not a matter of if something fails, it's a matter of when, because something or everything is gonna fail at some point. So how can we manage to put out with so many moments of truth? And I think keeping a good quality, it's been the toughest of the challenge, and it's a day-to-day thing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to use that quote. I think it's an absolutely excellent insight and something for folks to think about, whether they're starting their first space or expanding. I mean, you've used the word demanding, but it is really demanding, those hundreds of interactions. And you have to organize and deliver on that constantly, which can be fun or challenging.
If we do the example, if you would go to a restaurant and have breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right.
Every day for a month. I mean, you cannot stand the second week. I mean, even less, a year or 2 years. So it's there all day. I mean, it would be natural if you would spend 8 hours at your fitness facility.
Right.
you will get sick of it. You will like, yeah. You will hate.
Or I get irritated with the staff at some point or, right. Yeah. It's a high bar and it's unique. No, it's a great insight. Yeah. So we've talked about a few of these things, but over the years, what are you most proud of about your business today?
Well, I don't think it's pride, but I think which I love is that every week, at least once a week, I get this beautiful letter, like from someone or a beautiful story about a woman that since she got into our centers and became a member, she read something, an article that, I don't know, had her called her ex-husband and changed her life and started living more positive. And it's true. I mean, we always get those. Or they did a business or met someone or bought a mine together and then it's now in the stock exchange market. So reading at every happiness story or growing or productivity story is very rewarding. I mean, I cannot say it because it's not me, the one who should. But yeah, whenever I open my email or walk into an office, one of our clients will tell us one epic story about how iOS offices has helped them to become better in the personal or in the professional level, which is part of our mission statement. Our mission statement reads, we want to be a tool for the growth of our clients. So that's what we try to do.
Javier, I love that. And you're right. Like what we do is not just real estate. It's really meaningful. It has impact on people's lives. And with 20,000 members, statistically speaking, you get to experience that a lot more than most people do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really fun. And we are here for the long run. So I hope we keep in touch, Jamie. And I would love to also hear more about the industry. Thank you for heading the GWLUA, which I've been a part for a very long time now. And I have made friends. So during the summer, I stayed at one of our friends in San Antonio. And last month, I saw also one of them that was traveling into Mexico City.
Very nice.
Yeah, we have a very beautiful association. And I hope you can make it to one of our openings starting next year. Maybe you can come and give us the honor of traveling.
I could use a trip to Mexico now that you mention it. Javier, thank you for spending time with me today. I think we might have to do this again because like I said, there are more things I want to hear from your experience. But thank you and until next time.
Thank you very much, Jimmy. It's been fun.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.